Call to order the House Committee on Environment and Water, and we're going to begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 596. Let me open that and welcome Senator Haas to kick things off, and Senator Miles Anderson. You both come up. While they're getting ready, our intention today is to move from 596, spending about 40 minutes on 596, and I've asked everybody to keep their testimony very brief in order to make that possible, to 195,
to
631, and then 195. So that will carry it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Moniz Anderson. I represent Gresham, Trout, Deadwood Village, and Fairview. And I am here to testify on Senate Bill 596. Basically, it is time to eliminate DECA from the products used here in Oregon, and I want to give you a little bit of history on how this bill actually was carried by Representative Berger and I in 2005, and we were very successful, but not successful enough. We passed Penta and Octa, banned that, but we weren't able to get DECA. And what you will hear today, industry will tell you that it needs more study, but that is exactly what they said to us last time, and that there needs to be more alternatives. Well, we didn't have alternatives there. We did have alternatives back 4 years ago, but we still have the same three alternatives that have been studied in Washington State. So the studies have been done. The alternatives have been found to be very useful. And we really do need to eliminate it. It's the right thing for public health. At the time when we were working on this bill in 2005, they said, well, let's wait to see what the European Union would do. And they have since 2005 banned it in Europe. So the studies have been done. The alternatives are here. And everyone is saying that DECA it's a potential carcinogen. It's found in breast milk. It's time to get rid of this. So that's the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Haas?
Thank you. My name is Mark Haas, State Senator representing Beaverton, Alloa, and Southwest Portland. Chair Cannon, Vice Chair Gilliam, and members of this committee, thanks for taking this bill up today. As you just heard, in 2005, the Oregon legislature took decisive steps to clean the environment and leave Oregonians healthier. That was a ban of Penta and Octa brominated diphenyl ether. What we're talking about today is the other cousin, DECA. And we are in this unique position to continue the fight by adding DECA to this. Earlier this session, the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee that I'm on unanimously passed out this bill, which added DECA to the list of banned flame retardants in Oregon. It passed the Senate 22-8. So you have a long list of people behind me, and I want to get them up here. I just ask you to judge this bill for what it really is, one that recognizes that during the last 4 years, the verdict from the EPA is that DECA is registered as a potential carcinogen and as a bill that agrees with the scientific community's overwhelming support as DECA's classification as a dangerous chemical and as a bill that has the support of the International Association of Firefighters as well as firefighters here in Oregon. Now, committee, I find that remarkable. If you think about the support to ban this by firefighters. How bad must this chemical be for firefighters, the people who rely on flame retardants, to actively support a ban on a chemical used in a flame retardant? And the truth is that firefighters have come to the same conclusion as the medical and scientific community, that there's a bigger risk in health problems with this chemical than there is in fire problems without it. Alternatives exist. 4 years ago, the argument was made that the alternatives were not sound, but that has proven to be not true in the case of Boeing, Hewlett-Packard, Dell Computer, and even Oregon companies, including a mountain gear company in Ashland, that have all voluntarily ditched using this chemical in their materials and gone with the alternative. So with that, I just leave you with the fact that there's one opponent to this legislation, and that's the chemical industry. Understandably, they make this product and sell it and this legislation threatens sales. I don't believe these companies are looking out for the best interests of Oregonians, however. I think that is our job. Please don't be swayed by their name, which is Citizens for Fire Safety. It is the chemical industry. They are the only opponent to this, and I ask you to just judge this bill and the facts that are going to come before you here in a few moments from firefighters, doctors, scientists, and nursing mothers. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See if there are any quick questions. Seeing none, you're excused. Thanks so much for being here and for bringing this bill forward. We're going to go to a panel that will include Kevin Masterson, Jenny Pompilio, and Andy Harris. Or sorry, John Schmidt. We'll get to Andy on a later panel. So Kevin Masterson, Jenny Pompilio, and John Schmidt, please. Go ahead. We're going to try to move along quickly. So,
thank you, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Masterson. I work for the Department of Environmental Quality as the agency's toxics coordinator. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 596 as amended. This bill carries no fiscal impact for DEQ. DEQ is currently developing a comprehensive toxic strategy that will focus the agency's efforts on toxic pollutants posing the greatest threats to human health in the environment. This strategy will place a major emphasis on reducing toxic pollutants at the source, which is a much more cost-effective and environmentally protective approach than controlling, treating, or cleaning up the pollutants after they enter the environment. Senate Bill 596 will assist DEQ in achieving the objectives of our toxics reduction strategy. The first task in developing this strategy is to establish a list of high-priority toxic pollutants. One major information source that we're going to be using to select these priority toxics will be the Water Quality Priority Persistent Pollutant List that DEQ is developing in response to legislation that passed in 2007. That was Senate Bill 737. The recently released draft priority pollutant list includes several polybrominated diphenyl ether constituents, including the primary component of DECA PBDE, known as PBDE-209. The PBDEs are on this list because they are persistent, bioaccumulative, and toxic substances. PBDEs are structurally similar to PCBs, which are still found in the environment in humans and in animals 30-plus years after their sale and use were banned in the United States. Recent studies by the U.S. Geological Survey show that levels of PBDEs found in osprey eggs and resident fish in the Columbia River Basin are increasing steadily, while PCB levels in these species are finally starting to decline 30 years hence. Another USGS study recently detected a range of PBDEs, including the primary DECA BDE component, in suspended sediments in the lower Columbia and Willamette Rivers. Once in the environment, DECA PBDE has the potential to break down into the other two more toxic forms of PBDEs that the Oregon legislature banned in 2005. Because DECA BDE is used as a flame retardant in common consumer products such as electronics, they are spread widely in the environment rather than discharged by a few easily controlled sources. As a result, actions that reduce the pollutant closest to the source as possible are by far the most effective in addressing the environmental concerns posed by PBDEs. It's also important to note, as you've heard, that the state of Washington produced a report at the end of 2008 identifying effective and safer alternatives to DECA BDE. Senate Bill 596 will reduce future releases of PBDEs, thereby helping to protect Oregon's environment from the potential adverse impacts of these prevalent and highly persistent toxic substances. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony, and I'll take any questions if you have them.
Thanks. So we'll save questions until we've heard from other members of the panel, and I'm going to be asking folks to limit their comments. You did pretty well, to about 3 minutes each. We're on such a limited timeline today. I know you supplied, both of you, I think, extensive written comments, so go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Representative Cannon and Vice Chairman Gilliam, I am John Schmidt, D.C. chiropractic physician from Silverton, Oregon, and in practice 38 years. I've been chairman of my state association's public health committee for 8 years, and currently I'm the legislative co-chair for the Oregon Chiropractic Association. I will skip through to save time, I will skip through that top part. The reason I'm interested in this and the reason my state association is interested in this is, yes, we are interested in environment, but we're interested in the health aspects of this for human beings, and this particular substance has a significant impact. The nervous system is the major mechanism which correlates the integration of various parts of the body, the reactions and adjustments of the organism to its environment with conscious life. The chiropractor's role is with the nervous system, and as such, then, we are interested in neurotoxins. This particular substance is a neurotoxin and a very potent one, and that's why I'm here. Regarding the polybrominated diphenyl ethers in general and DECA in particular, the following. Number one, yes, they do occur in wildlife, particularly that part of the food chain which supplies vital nutrients to us as human beings, such as omega-3 oils. Omega-3 fish oils are still safely available, but only from non-farm-fed fish due to pollutants and other chemical substances in the food stream and in the food. For certain species, they are safe only for human consumption due to multiple contamination and toxin sources. Number two, these neurotoxins cause disruptive spontaneous behavior in children and adults, impairing learning, costing our school system far more than is necessary, along with other neurotoxic effects. Number three, there are powerful endocrine disruptors altering estrogen and thyroid hormone homeostasis, further raising our health care costs and causing undue suffering with human beings. Number four, there may be, according to some sources, and definitely according to other sources, cancer-causing and apoptosis, i.e. cell death mechanisms associated with these substances. There are more prevalent in children and infants. These substances are more prevalent in children and infants, primarily due to maternal transfer in utero, and there was a lot of testimony about this at the hearing on the Senate side. But this contamination in breast milk potentiates the amount of exposure of infants. Not only are they getting it in their breast milk, but they're also getting it in their mattresses and their pajamas and the carpets they're crawling on as they're learning to walk. So the children are getting an incredibly larger exposure than adults. Specifically, the DECA form does degrade. This degradation causes...
Wrap up your testimony, please.
Go
ahead and wrap up your testimony.
Okay, please. I'm done. One sentence. DECA form does degrade. The degradation releases bromine, a halogen, which affects our thyroid function. And that's the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks for supplying these written documentation to support what you're describing to us on the front page. Go ahead.
My name is Jenny Pompilio, and I'm a physician. I'm actually dually trained in internal medicine and pediatrics. I've practiced internal medicine for the last several years, but advocate for the health of our children. As a physician and current MPH candidate at PSU, but also, and probably most importantly, the mother of a 3-year-old who breastfed for the first year of his life, I'm here to support Senate Bill 596. DECA should be included in the definition of hazardous substances, you know, if only obviously because it breaks down into the penta and octa forms, and these have already been added to the hazardous substance list. DECA is a high production volume that's used, chemical that's used as a flame retardant in common products like televisions. And a recent shift to high definition TV recently has made many of our old televisions obsolete, which is going to increase exposures to many families as they go out to buy new televisions. DECA is unique. It doesn't bind harshly to materials, so it leaches into the environment and thus is present in indoor air quality, affecting indoor air quality and in dust. This definitely puts infants and young children at higher risk for ingestion because of their increased hand-to-mouth behaviors. My son is a testimony to that, even though I was aware of this as a problem. It's very hard to prevent hand-mouth behaviors in toddlers. I'll jump down. The most human health concerns we have regarding flame retardants have arisen from epi and animal studies. While some may argue that these studies have their limitations, the ethical implications of doing direct human testing on humans precludes that it's ever really going to be done. So we have to take a precautionary approach. Given the research that is available, the health concerns for DECA include nervous system toxicity, reproductive and developmental disruption, including endocrine and thyroid disruption, and cancers. All toxic flame retardants are known to cross the placental barrier and result in exposure to the fetuses. And bodybuilding testing does confirm levels in women's breast milk, which can then be transferred to their infants. When I was pregnant and breastfeeding my first child, we purchased a new large-screen HD TV. As a physician aware of environmental toxins and their effects on human development, I have not been able to allay my fear that my son Brady has been exposed to inordinate amounts of toxic flame retardants despite my best efforts to protect him. As a physician and student of public health and a mother, I would like to see DECA added to Oregon's list of hazardous substances so it is no longer available and readily used consumer goods like our television. And God forbid, if Brady would ever develop a chronic health problem, I'll probably think back to his early years and the possible toxins he was exposed to when I was breastfeeding him and when he was a young child. And I would certainly hope that we would have the foresight to add DECA to the list of hazardous substances. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see if there are questions. Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last time we looked at this issue, we were looking at other forms of these chemical, PBDEs, I suppose, huh? Mm-hmm. And it was agreed generally by the industry and others that the other forms were carcinogenic and dangerous. And so we had a general agreement that we should ban those substances. And we also agreed at the time that we would continue to look at DECA to see if the new studies indicated something similar with that. Now, at least two of you have testified that there is that DECA has the potential of breakdown into the other more toxic forms, the ones we've already outlawed. And one of you, I think, has indicated that DECA is dangerous itself because of endocrine effects in the body. Do we have direct evidence that DECA actually breaks down into these other two more toxic forms? Now, we didn't have it at the time of the last time we addressed this issue. What evidence do we have that it actually breaks down? And if you know, if not, perhaps some of the other witnesses coming later can answer that question.
Second
I know that it has been shown to break down into those products, but I can't cite the studies.
I'm looking for. I've got something in here, and I've got it under number six. Unfortunately, my number six is not reading.
If I may, Mr. Chair, for me, the issue is this chemical is either dangerous directly, as suggested by Dr. Schmidt's testimony, or it's dangerous because it breaks down into other more dangerous chemicals, or both. If any of those things are proved, I would support the bill. If they're not proved, I probably wouldn't.
The study of photolytic degradation of polybrominated diphenyl ethers under UV lamp and solar irradiations addresses the degradation. I'm not ready to answer that specifically regarding DECA. I ran on to, oh no, here it is. The technical product with the highest use is DECA, brominated diphenyl ether, BBB. I'm not a chemist, so
right.
I'm not claiming to be a chemist. BDE-209, therefore we chose to examine solar UV degradation of BDE-209, a linear increase of the photodegradation rate constant for BDE-209 was observed with the solar light intensity. The degradation reactions follow the pseudo-first-order kinetics. I do not know what that means, by the way. The photodegradation of BDDE produced I think this is the key sentence why I picked this. I found several studies in my search, but produced less brominated diphenyl ethers under ultraviolet light exposure, suggesting that photodegradation is a sequential dehalogenation mechanism, and that's actually how I got into this, was the bromine. The bromine that's released, in addition to the neurotoxic effects of this, the bromine that's released binds up receptor sites for thyroid, and right. You've got less effective thyroid and other hormone functions.
Right, and that's what you're testifying to.
That's kind of how I got to this whole subject.
And I want to draw the committee's attention to a letter from Gail Shibley at the Department of Human Services. Her office produced a report in late 2007. It might have come out in early 2008. It was presented to the Interim Committee on Energy and Environment on DECA VDE. This letter then sort of updates that report and speaks, I think, directly, Representative Barnhart, to the question you're asking. So
right.
I would...
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's very helpful.
She can't be here today, but did want to make sure that we saw this. And while I'm talking to the record, we have a letter also from the International Association of Firefighters. I'm going to move on to the next panel. Thank you for being here. And let's bring up Alan Treseder, Dr. Gordon Nelson, and Maureen Gorson.
Not for kids, but then that's typical for this kind of thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Alan Treseder, and I'm here today to represent the Institute of Fire Safety. We have people from out of state here that I want to give as much time as possible to. I just want to make a couple of comments. I don't usually do this, but I feel compelled to do so. Senator Lori Moniz Anderson testified on three significant points that I would like to rebut at this time. She said there was an alternative readily available. That is incorrect in the concept that you, instead of putting DECA in that product, you put products X in and you make the product in the same way. That doesn't work. There is no product you can do that with. If you redesign the entire product and use a different rosin, a different plastic, then you can use a different fire retardant. But if you're making a television set the way Sony makes television sets, and you tell them not to use DECA, they can't use product X. They have to redesign the television set and use a different plastic and redesign the mechanics. So that's point one. Senator Anderson also suggested that DECA had been banned in Europe. That is absolutely not true. DECA has not been banned in Europe, period. It hasn't. And finally, the senator suggested that DECA was a known carcinogen in human beings. That is not true. That is never. There's not a scintilla of evidence to suggest that's true. And finally, Senator Haas said, judge this for what it is. And I would encourage you to do that. Let's look at this bill very closely. Let's listen to the evidence. And Senator Haas, in parting, noted that the chemical industry would oppose this bill because they're making this the only known, most effective fire retardant in the world and the most studied fire retardant in the world. And somehow that if you banned it, then there would be an economic loss. And I can tell you that precisely the same chemical companies that make DECA make the alternative. The only reason they use DECA is because it is the most studied fire retardant in the world, well over 1,100 different studies. Secondly, it is unquestionably the most effective fire retardant in the world. And it has a 35-year history of science looking at it without anyone suggesting that it should be banned. No federal agency. A state banned it but had so many exemptions it's unclear to us what they actually banned. So there is no economic gain to be made because the precise chemical companies that make DECA make the alternative. They use DECA because... without question, it's the best. With that, I would like to turn the panel over to Dr. Gordon Nelson, who is probably the most renowned scientist in America on DECA, and he has a brief statement and would be glad to answer any questions you had.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Gordon Nelson. I'm Dean of the College of Science at Florida Institute of Technology. I have a bachelor's degree of chemistry from University of Nevada and an MS and PhD in chemistry from Yale University. I started my career at General Electric Corporate R&D in 1970, became the first manager of combustibility technology for GE Plastics in 1974, and was later manager of environmental protection for the multi-billion dollar worldwide plastics business. In 1980, I became vice president of material science and technology at Springborn Laboratories in Connecticut. In 1982, the head of the Department of Polymer Science at the University of Southern Mississippi, which is one of the four top polymer departments in the country. And in 1989, I became the first dean of the College of Science and Liberal Arts at Florida Institute of Technology. Since 1972, my personal research area has been fire retardancy. My first large-scale tests involved televisions, NDECA and polystyrene. Why? Because General Electric Television was interested in the impact of flame retardants on TV fire safety. In 1973, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission declared televisions as made in the United States of unreasonable fire risk. 200 fire deaths a year, 800 life-threatening fires, and 20,000 fires per year out of 125 million units. In 1973, most internal parts were, in fact, flame retardant. What wasn't? The antenna bracket, the tuner bracket, and the enclosure. Our first test was a single 21-inch GE color television in a 10 by 10-foot room. We hot wire ignited the tuner bracket so it'd be an internal fire. At 5 minutes into the test, we couldn't see into the room. The wire glass was too hot to touch. The air coming out of the room air handling system was 500 degrees F. And the temperature above the television was 900 degrees F. If that was a home, that's a life-threatening fire. Substituting the three non-flame retardant parts at that time with DECA and polystyrene did the same test. We couldn't hot wire ignite the television set. Secondly, we next took a plastic waste basket, filled it with half-pint kids' empty milk cartons, lit it off, and we melted the side of the television set. It, again, did not ignite. We need to remember why we use flame retardants, and that is to protect lives. Indeed, CPSC recently brought forward an open flame test for upholstered furniture. Why? Because there are 350 people in the U.S. who die annually from that.
Dr. Nelson, you've traveled a long way to be here. I'm extending your time by 2 minutes, but then it's up.
Okay. DECA has been used effectively since the early 1970s, after extensive testing. It's the most tested flame retardant. DECA has passed extensive risk assessment in the European Union. And their results were, in fact, published in last May. You need to read those, because that's an evaluation of 1,100 studies. Because of that risk assessment, Sweden last May was ordered to lift its ban on DECA. Ordered to lift its ban on DECA because it didn't correspond to the risk assessment. DECA is very different from Octa and Penta. There is no direct replacement of DECA. What does that mean? There's not chemical A that you replace DECA with in polystyrene. If you want to do that, what you have to do is replace the plastic. Now, you can do that. You can replace the plastic. But that requires redesign of the part, and it's a 2x cost. Other flame retardants have not been as extensively tested. In fact, I was surprised in the State of Washington report that one of the materials that they list is triphenylphosphate. Well, in fact, triphenylphosphate is a known endocrine disruptor, has neurotoxicity, is a known allergen, has high toxicity, aquatic toxicity to trout. Phosphate flame retardants are, in fact, being found in the environment. Recent study in Tokyo suggests that phosphorus compounds are higher in home and offices in those environments than, in fact, brominated flame retardants. So that we, in fact, need risk assessment. And decisions should not be made without risk assessment. If we pass this bill, DECA is still going to be in the environment. And in fact,
Sir, your time is up, so I'm going to ask that we hold any additional comments to questions that may come in response to your testimony. Thank you for being here, and we'll hear from our final guest on this panel.
Yeah, hi, thank you. My name is Maureen Gorson, and until 6 weeks ago, I was the director of the Department of Toxic Substances Control in California. And before that, I was a general counsel of the California Environmental Protection Agency. And I'm here to just talk about why ban bills don't actually achieve greater environmental protection. California has a long experience with ban bills, and in the past 2 or 3 years has abandoned any further ban bills because of their experience with regrettable substitutions. Without specifying that the substitution is safer than the thing that you've banned, what you can end up with is regrettable substitutions. One example, the Airboard banned a certain auto degreaser with VOCs without specifying what the alternative would be, and auto repair shops picked a substance with an hexane, ended up stripping the nerve endings out of young auto workers' hands. Many young men lost the use of their hands in California. MTBE, of course, is the quintessential environmental policy failure in California. Where we traded off one environmental benefit for another environmental harm. The second highest use of flame retardants in Oregon or in the United States is for upholstered furniture. And if you take out DECA, the choice is going to probably be chlorinated Tris. That's what they will reach for. That's what used to be in sleepwear in the early 70s. The other choices are chloral alkyl phosphates, halogenated aryl esters, tetrabromyl phthalate, diol diester. So I would suggest that without focusing on what is the safer substitute, just banning DECA does not necessarily get you to a greater environmental protective environment.
Thank you very much. Let's see if there are questions. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Alan, I appreciated your admonition that we look at the data. I also appreciated my colleague's suggestion that since I keep my computer here, I look something up. Two questions. The first, is our feeling that we should always use DECA as a flame retardant, or maybe let me cabin that a little bit, we should always use DECA until a ideal chemical one-for-one replacement is devised somehow, or is our fear that the 2x production cost suggest to us that we should at least put off by X number of, Y number of months or years, a transition to a new type of plastic and a new set of designs?
The computer industry really, we had read off a list of companies earlier that don't make televisions. Polycarbonate ABS, polystyrene, polyphenylene oxide, alternatives that are listed in the Washington Report are in fact used in computers and have been since 1973. They've been around. So I think that the issue separates computers and televisions. Television is where polystyrene is used and has been that effective black material that you see on your television set that's in your house. Effective material, as was said earlier, the several companies make the other guys. But they know that DECA is a safe, effective material, still permissible after full risk assessment in Europe, still being used. And so as products get designed, in fact, with plasma televisions, they are being designed. The flame retardant polystyrene is not in the back. It's in the fire.
And I apologize for interrupting, but I think I'm gathering you're saying with lots of extra, maybe designed to educate or maybe just resulting in confuse, that we should keep using it because as far as we know, it's safe.
We know it's safe. There's really no substantive data that it's not. And let us continue to use it and certainly not do a legislative ban in the absence of risk assessment that says it's essential to do that.
And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, if I might respond. Representative Cannon mentioned the Department of Human Services study of DECA that was done last year, and that report was given to then-Representative Dingfelter's interim committee. And that study reached a conclusion that was inconclusive. Now, if I understand the chair has a letter from our friend at DHS, but that study at the time was inconclusive, and there was no evidence that it should be banned. And the last thing I'd like you to think about, and this isn't dispositive, Representative Smith, but if, in fact, you have to redesign the product to use the alternative, which we don't know if the alternative is going to be worse than DECA, it may very well be, and how many television manufacturers are going to manufacture televisions just for Oregon? I mean, if you just think about the economics of that, well, we have to redesign it so we can meet the Oregon ban. And I'm thinking the Sonys of the world, not so much are they going to redesign their old television manufacturing.
We're clearly a market maker on television.
No question. Could be. Maybe you're buying more TVs than I realize. I knew you'd be there.
I got it. Follow-up, Representative Smith.
So the way I'm breaking this question down essentially into two questions. First, is DECA poison? And second, if it's a poison, is it worth having anyway? Right, because it keeps people from burning up, and because anything we would use instead to keep people from burning up would be just as bad a poison. Because that's how I break it down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but I'm still on this first question about whether it's poison or not. I heard what you said, but my good friend told me to look something up, so I did, and this is what I said. And it's from the internet, so what can you really? I mean, you know, these computers, how can you trust them? It says DECA breaks down under sunlight and during metabolic processes into the types of toxic flame retardants penta and octa. And other things I can't pronounce, recently banned in California and Europe, which are market makers. So is the web lying, which it can do, or do we just not think that we're going to have this stuff under sunlight or during metabolic processes?
Neither California nor Europe have banned DECA.
No, they've banned penta and octa. And it's
So have we.
Okay.
Oregon
so we're not worried about that it breaks down into those two things?
No, and I think that one needs to understand the relevance, for example, of sunlight. It also breaks down to other things, and that is hydroxyl methyl groups on organic chemical, which in fact are found in sponges. So you actually get into natural products.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is the full risk assessment, which we have with DECA. And that is the reason it's published what they're doing in the European Commission and continuing to do in monitoring. But as of this publication, DECA is free for use in Europe on the basis of the science. And it was very clear to Sweden when the European Commission staff came to them and said, they had a comprehensive ban on DECA, and they said you have to lift it.
So, other people have questions.
Yeah.
Let me just say that, Mr. Chair, I understand the testimony that it might be a poison that's worth it, but if it breaks down into poisons, I'm not yet compelled with an argument that, you know, it's a safe product. It may be a safe product on net, but I still have questions.
Thanks. Representative Barnhart, Representative Gilliam to follow. First, Representative Barnhart, if you still had a question.
Thank you. Yes, I do. Dr. Nelson, I'm looking at your profile at the Florida Institute of Technology, what the wonders of the Internet. You list a number of selected publications that go back to 2005. All of them appear to be about the flammability properties of various compounds and substances.
Yes.
None of them seem to be about health effects of chemical breakdowns of these. Can you describe what your qualifications are to talk about that aspect? I understand your qualifications are very clear to talk about flammability and safety in the relation to the flammability of products, but I'm wondering about your qualification to talk about the health aspects of the breakdown of these chemicals.
First, about health effects. This is a book that I was co-author of in 1993, which is the most comprehensive study of carbon monoxide human lethality in fire. And so the toxic agent in fire happens to be carbon monoxide. Second,
right, again, we're dealing with flammability. The question here is not about flammability. It's about these more subtle breakdowns in the environment. It seems to be what the concern is, and that's really the gist of my question.
Well, if one went back and looked at the earlier papers, you'll find a number that deal with health issues related to fire. Now, recognize I was manager of combustibility technology for GE Plastics, and I was manager of environmental protection for GE Plastics. And so that I have had a long interest through the years in the health impacts, but one needs to understand those fully. First of all, what's the acute toxic agents in fire, and people have argued about this. Well, this shows that, it, in fact, is carbon monoxide very clearly. Then one gets into, okay, what are the myriad of things that can come off in a fire situation, which are many, many thousands of compounds? They don't impact the acute toxicity. They can, in fact, impact the chronic toxicity. So that I've been involved in fire comprehensively for 35 years, and including basically all aspects of health and safety of fire.
Thank you. That's very, your credential on that subject is very clear. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam, and then we'll have to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to get back to conclusive studies. And there was an implication in previous testimony that perhaps we didn't have enough, or that it was a stall tactic in some way. I don't know if that was that's what I inferred from that. And I think Mr. Tressiter said we've had 1,100
at least 11. It is clearly the most studied fire retardant in the world.
All right. Is that, do we consider for this moment the case closed, or is Europe doing it? Is there anything nationally? Is the EPA coming? What's coming on? I mean, we seem to be pushing this button, but I'm wondering what's going on nationally.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, what people are now looking at is green chemistry policy. I think your person from DEQ was talking about a comprehensive toxic strategy. And then at the federal level, TSCA reform. We're on the brink of TSCA reform. And it's this idea that we really need to look at the substitutes and have informed information about the substitutes. Just banning something, it doesn't get us to the safer place. It gets rid of this one thing we may have a concern about. There may be some studies that show it has this bad effect, this harm. But what are the alternatives that the industrial chemists who are making the product going to reach for?
Okay, follow-up.
But
what I'm getting at is if we need that, if that's the direction to go, is it coming? I mean, are we, it might be coming, or do you think we're going to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam. There is a national study that has just been commissioned by the National Institute of Standards and Technology named NIST at the request of the International Association of Firefighters and the National Association of State Fire Marshals. They are going to, because the issue of firefighters and fire marshals, it's mixed around the states. Some firefighters oppose the ban, some firefighters support the ban. So the International Association of Firefighters and the National Association of Fire Marshals have requested NIST to conduct a comprehensive study of all the studies. And we expect that to commence within the next 30 to 60 days and probably be completed within 3 to 4 months.
One last to follow, Mr. Chair.
You know, I'm going to ask this panel, do they have consumed, and I know we have other questions waiting as well. I had intended to give this entire hearing no longer than 40 minutes in order to move through our other bills today as well. We are at 40 minutes, so thank you. You've had about half of our total time. We are going to hear from some additional witnesses, and I encourage you to take this
question. I'm not aided by laptops. I'm much slower. Have one more question.
You can ask
two separate points,
Smith.
Mr. Chair.
Do you have? I hope you have DECA in that computer the way you passed how fast you use it.
Representative Gilliam, why don't you ask your question while we bring up the next panel, and they can get back to you in the hallway or
Mr. Chairman, I would point out you all know how to find me.
Absolutely.
So,
thank you.
Out of state witnesses will be gone, but.
My question for this panel or the
hang on a sec.
That are coming
hang on
up.
A sec. Oh, let me invite them up and then ask. So they're on their way up before you ask your question. So we're going to hear next from Andy Harris, Matt Wallace, and Bob Salinger. Go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I was interested in their take and others on why this bill, I was briefed by somebody, maybe DEQ, why it accepts auto and airline. I guess it would be child seats and airlines. And I just wanted to get their take on that as
okay.
well as our.
So there may be other witnesses who can and speak to that.
I believe representatives of those industries asked to be accepted.
Why don't you go ahead with your testimony?
Chairman Cannon and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 596. I am Andy Harris, a physician with Physicians for Social Responsibility. PBDEs are not bound in polymer products like electronics, fabrics, carpets, and cushions, and thus can leach out into the environment. 80 to 90% of the U.S. exposure occurs through contact with house dust. The remaining exposures are primarily through food. Infants and toddlers are the most vulnerable because they spend more time crawling on carpets and ingest more when they mouth objects. Children also breathe more air per body weight than do adults. PBDEs are able to cross the placenta in the first trimester of pregnancy and affect developing fetuses. A study in Environmental Health Perspectives early this year found that PBDEs accumulate in fetal blood and liver at a rate 10 to 100 times greater than found in the mother. PBDEs closely resemble the known carcinogen polychlorinated biphenyl PCB. Like PCBs, they persist in the environment over decades. They're fat-soluble, and they bioaccumulate as they ascend the food chain. And we all know who eats at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
PBDEs are listed by the U.S. EPA as a potential carcinogen. And the chance that DECA BDE could be carcinogenic to people is enough to discontinue its use. Animal studies in rats indicate that PBDEs are endocrine disruptors interfering with normal genital development and fertility. And let's not dismiss studies in mice, since, in fact, mice have a version of the same 100,000 genes that humans have, perhaps more similarities than we like to admit. A study in the peer-reviewed journal Neurotoxicology found that DECA BDEs cause persistent hyperactivity in mice after administration of a relatively low dose during the newborn period. Nearly everyone acknowledges the adverse impact of DDT and PCBs have on human health and the natural world. DECA BDEs are structurally similar to these chemicals and need to be banned as well. I would like to take exception to Mr. Tressider's comment that that no state has passed this. Actually, Maine and Washington are phasing out DECA BDEs. So thank you very much for your time and interest in protecting the health of Oregon's children.
Thanks, Dr. Harris. Either.
Sure, I guess I'll go next. For the record, my name is Matt Wallace. I'm the consumer advocate for OSPIRG. We're a statewide, citizens-based public interest advocacy organization. I want to thank the committee for the chance to weigh in support of Senate Bill 596 today. I submitted some written comments, which I think go over in large substance much of what has been gone over by proponents before, so I'll leave my spoken comments very brief, but do, of course, just want to weigh in from the standpoint of a consumer protection advocacy group. And I think the one thing that is worth noticing is that the issues surrounding PBDEs really are consistent with an unfortunate pattern the last half century. As the gentleman from the Physicians for Social Responsibility noted, these chemicals are very similar in structure to other infamous now chemicals such as PCBs and DDT. Ultimately, the information we have is, of course, incomplete, but the information we do have raises serious concerns that have only increased with time since we last looked at the issue here at this legislature in 2005. In retrospect, it appears that the appropriate policy on PCBs would have been to keep them off the market and out of wide-scale use, and we think that the same is true for PBDEs, both in their Octopenta and now DECA forms. The last couple things I just wanted to mention, since we've had a minute to look at, through this issue, while the committee has been considering and hearing testimony, since it is the information age, I also did a quick internet search. I'm far from an expert on international regulation, especially when it comes to this sort of chemical. But if members of the committee care to do that themselves, a quick Google search on the European Union and DECA BDE. Looks an awful lot to me, upon reading the initial spate of articles, like the European Court of Justice last year upheld a decision against an exemption that previously existed for DECA BDE, especially for electronics products. And then just wanted to add to the record, in addition to the updated letter that the committee has from DHS from their 2008 report, other states, of course, have looked at specifically DECA BDE, its ability to break down into dangerous constituent chemicals. Illinois is an example of that, and I can provide a citation for that for the committee if they're interested as well. So I'll leave my spoken comments there, and thanks again for the opportunity to weigh in and support.
Thank you very much. Bob, it's much more pleasant to meet in your office with Forest Park outside the windows than here.
Happy to have you up there anytime. Good afternoon. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society, and I've spent much of the last 17 years working on recovering peregrine falcons from another persistent bioaccumulative toxic chemical, DDT. And if I can convey one thing to you, it's that it's a lot easier to prevent these chemicals before they enter the environment than to deal with the economic and ecological impacts after they're well established. And so I encourage you today to use the precautionary principle and look at the data, and we hope that you will come to the conclusion that this substance should be banned. And I'm here today representing not only Portland Audubon Society, but also Lane County Audubon Society, Kalmiopsis Audubon Society, Salem Audubon Society, Siskiyou Audubon Society, and our 20,000 members across the state. I want you to stop and imagine a world without some of the most iconic species in the Pacific Northwest, bald eagles, peregrine falcons, osprey, and pelicans. Today, our children can experience these species, look up in the sky and see them flying overhead, because our political leaders had the courage in 1972 to make a controversial decision and ban the pesticide DDT. Since that time, it's taken nearly four decades of intensive effort and the expenditure of hundreds of millions of dollars to bring these species back from the brink of extinction. And the reality is that we're still seeing the impacts of DDT today. Every single peregrine falcon nest in the Pacific Northwest still shows signs of eggshell thinning because of DDT. It's going to be with us for a very, very long time, even though it's been banned for decades. We can't take that same chance with PBDEs. We need to learn the lessons of the past. What do we know about PBDEs, and DECA in particular? We know that DECA, like other forms of PBDE, has been classified as a persistent bioaccumulative toxin. We know that DECA PBDE, once believed to break down rapidly in the environment and to be less well absorbed than the other two forms of PBDE, Octa and Penta, that were banned in 2004, can be debrominated by fish and bacteria into the Octa and Penta forms. There are 21 studies that have been done on how it breaks down. Seven of them found it broke down into these substances. And I would refer you to a letter that will be submitted into the record by Washington Department of Ecology's Carol Craigie. In this letter, she writes, while it's true that DECA BDE alone is not as toxic as Penta or Octa forms that the industry has voluntarily removed from the market, recent studies show that it is more toxic than we previously thought, and perhaps more importantly, DECA breaks down into these toxic forms. That's from Washington Department of Ecology. We also know that PBDEs are becoming pervasive across the globe, with research now demonstrating that they can be found in not only in population centers, but also in the most remote locations on our planet. We know they're being found in a huge array of species, including human breast milk, barn owls, peregrine falcons, bald eagles, foxes, grizzly bears, hermit crabs, mussels, harbor seals, porpoises, pilot and beluga whales. And the list goes on and on.
Bob, if you finish up, please.
Sure, happy to do so. The last thing I would just say is that we do know that there are economically viable alternatives, and we very just strongly encourage you to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you all, and we'll look forward to following up if we do have questions subsequent to this hearing. Let's hear from Betsy Earls and Kirsten Balding, and on deck will be Travis Williams, Andrea Salinas, and Bob Livingston.
Betsy said she might be
Betsy has to go. So why don't we then have, well, Travis, Andrea, Bob, you can come find a seat up here as well.
Thank you. My name is Kirsten Balding. I'm the Education and Outreach Coordinator and a nurse for the Oregon Burn Center in Portland, Oregon at Legacy Emanuel Hospital. I think it's important for me to start out right at first by saying that we are not against the environment and we are not for chemicals in mother's breast milk. Also, we are a medical agency. So with all that being said, we are opposed to this bill. As the only burn center in Oregon, we have a unique view on this issue. As you consider passing the law banning effective flame retardants, the Oregon Burn Center would just urge caution in taking note of something that is integral to public safety, such as flame retardants. While there still may be questions regarding yet-to-be-determined risks, we know that DECA BDE does do things that are important to our line of work in caring for patients who have been severely burned. We know that DECA BDE does save lives. We know that its efficacy is unquestioned at this point. And we know that it does allow crucial moments for families to escape from a terrible situation, allowing them to get out hopefully uninjured or with minor burn injuries at most. Every day we see both children and adults who come into our facility whose lives are changed forever from severe burn injuries and the devastation that fire causes them. We know that burn injuries are painful, they are life-altering, and they leave behind debilitating physical and mental scars. Burn injuries are very expensive, with most of our hospital patients ranging in 6 weeks to 9 month stays, and most of our hospital bills running into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. We also know that burn injuries are preventable on multiple levels. And while we are in the business of treating these severe burn injuries, I would much, much rather prevent a burn injury from occurring in the first place. We hope that you will act in the interest of public safety and just delay action on this bill until obviously more study can be done. It's obvious that we don't know all the ramifications of taking it out or what it's doing to the environment, and we advocate for finding an equally safe alternative. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here, and well done with time to spare. Travis?
My name is Travis Williams, and I'm executive director and riverkeeper for a nonprofit organization, Willamette Riverkeeper. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a little bit today about our support of SB 596. And what I've found interesting today so far is that there's been a tremendous amount of analysis of this chemical by our neighbor up north. It has happened in many other parts of the world. We've seen a bit of disinformation disclosed about what the EU has done, what the previous person said in testimony, that European court upheld the fact that the DECA ban should stay in place, has been widely reported. The countries of Finland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Portugal took that to court because they felt strongly enough about it. What we're seeing with the EU is kind of an internal policy struggle in many ways. That's my perception. But more importantly, it's not as if this bill says, well, you can't use DECA and you can't use anything else either. This report that was done in Washington State identifies different product categories, and the one they recommend for plastic is RDP. Resorcinol bidiphenyl phosphate. The biggest difference with RDP, according to the information that Washington has compiled, is that it has a much less persistent presence in the environment if it's introduced. That's a huge difference. You think about what Bob Salinger brought up about the work that's been done to recover species like peregrine falcon. I know that when I'm out on the Willamette River, and I've been out there a lot, I've traveled hundreds and hundreds of miles on that river in various areas, One of the species I focused on is osprey. This was the same situation for osprey. They were literally decimated. What we have is a situation where we can get ahead of this. The folks who study this at the molecular level down at USGS and Corvallis are very concerned about the health of osprey, given that they have, in a couple examples, have worked their entire lives to recover this species. They and many others have made a call on this, that this is something that could be very problematic for osprey. I think in terms of going back to the human health issue and the relationship to fire and risk, the fact that the Fire Safety Committee, which was composed of firefighting professionals and people who care about people getting burned in the state of Washington, evaluated very carefully the known alternatives. And again, I just want to stress that this stuff has been done. This is not new. We are not recreating the wheel here. There's good science out there that is pointing us in the direction to go. And I think about, you know, we've heard a lot over the decades.
Finish up, please, Travis.
You bet. We've heard a lot over the decades about more study. We should find a better solution. Well, you guys might be familiar with this book, and I was somewhat reluctant to bring Silent Spring here to show you this, but this is, in essence, the very same issue we were talking about. She was looking at DDT. A lot of people said, no, wait. There's many examples of this through history where industry has come out and said, well, we need a little more time. There needs to be a little more of a definitive study to be done. And for no good cause, we've simply wasted time when we've known enough to take action. And from my perspective, we know enough. We can learn from the past. Is lead gasoline makes an issue? Same issue. People fought for years to deal with that. So I will leave it at that. I appreciate your patience and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. And while we have a moment, we have a letter from Carol Craig at the Washington Department of Ecology. She refers to this Fire Safety Committee that you described and its conclusions regarding alternatives. And that should be before the committee. Andrea.
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the Legislative Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I've distributed testimony from Dr. Renee Hackenmiller-Paradis, who cannot be here today, and I will just summarize her testimony. The Oregon Environmental Council supports SB 596A in gross, which will add DECA BDE to the definition of hazardous substance under Oregon law. DECA is not chemically bound to the materials it's added to and readily leaves these materials where it can mix with home dust, soil, and be absorbed by fish, mammals, birds, and humans. I know others today have discussed the human health impacts, and Renee has included some of OEC's concerns on these impacts of DECA in her testimony, but I would like to cite EPA's Integrated Risk Information System, which finds DECA to be a possible carcinogen. The weight of experimental evidence is on the strong end of the spectrum for the descriptor. Suggested evidence of carcinogenic potential, since there is suggestive evidence that DECA BDE is carcinogenic for more than one species, sex, and site. Based on weight of the evidence, a dose response assessment of the carcinogenicity of DECA BDE is deemed appropriate. Government reports from Illinois, Maine, and Washington also highlight a range of alternatives to DECA, including product redesign to eliminate the need for added chemicals. Companies such as Hewlett-Packard, Dell, Apple, and IKEA have all voluntarily stopped using DECA BDE and have either switched to safer alternatives or have implemented design changes that eliminate the need for flame retardants. As others have mentioned, in 2005, Oregon voted to pass legislation that phases out the use of two other toxic flame retardants in consumer products, Octa and Penta BDE. Recent research has found that DECA BDE can break down over time into Penta and Octa. And we feel that this finding demonstrates that DECA BDE actually becomes the two other forms that are already banned in the state of Oregon. Demonstrating both the health and environmental impacts of DECA BDE make it clear that it's time to move forward and legislatively recognize that DECA is a hazardous substance requiring action to reduce exposures. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Andrea. And if somebody can swap out with Bob, and we'll bring him up. Stay on deck, Andrea, in case there are any questions. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I am also a firefighter, but my communications and correspondence will be of my own opinion, as well as the Oregon State Firefighters Council, as well as the International Association of Firefighters. I want to set the record straight with respect to a couple of things that have been said. One, with respect to the position of the IAFF, as well as the Oregon State Firefighters, we do support passage of Senate Bill 596, as well as does the International Association of Firefighters. The reason for this is that, simply put, We appreciate the fact that the chemical companies have safer and better alternatives. We were in the building when we had this issue come before previous legislatures, and the fact of the matter is we were concerned with, are there alternatives? And as a matter of fact, there weren't at that time. Fortunately, the chemical companies have done a good job, and they have safer alternatives that are out there. And so with respect, I'm not going to read it, but I would strongly encourage you to read the letter that's dated to me from Rich Duffy of the International Association of Firefighters. The reason that we're asking for additional studies is not specific to DECA. We are convinced and we believe it's a harmful fire retardant. What we're asking for is as new products come online, we study those. So I want to set the record straight with respect to that, and it's pretty clear if you will read the letter. And finally, just two more issues that I'd like to point out. As I've done research on this issue, two things, and I'll quote to you, and I know there's other states that have already eliminated PBDEs, and this is from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in a report on DECA to the Minnesota Legislature dated January 15, 2008. Companies that are phasing DECA out of some or all of their products include Apple, Canon, Dell, Ericsson, HP Monitors, IBM, Intel, Toshiba, LG Electronics, Nokia, Panasonic, Samsung, Sony Ericsson, Motorola. And I think the point of that is I think many of those probably produce a lot of televisions. They've done it through product redesign, through safer alternatives. And finally, in a report from Illinois' EPA on a report on flame retardants in general, the Illinois EPA found there to be a significant number of alternatives that are affordable, available, and have better toxicity rankings than DECA BDE. And that's the point that I'd like to just finally end with, is that we are convinced as firefighters PBDs are toxics, particularly for our firefighters when we go into these. As the previous speaker spoke about the smoke and the toxicities that are there, it's our members that are exposed to those. And I think it speaks to itself that we're one of the only organizations, whether it's a labor organization or a large corporation, that has an entire agency, a department that's committed to the safety of their firefighters. And that's why you receive a letter from Rich Duffy every year. We have a Redmond Symposium specific to how can we be safer with firefighting, not only for firefighters but our families. And so with that, that's why we support Senate Bill 596. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions for any of these panelists? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am looking at this letter, and it says that there are companies such as Hewlett-Packard, Dell, Apple, IKEA have all voluntary stopped using DECA and have switched to safer substitutes. But then I see this other report that says the tests haven't been done to say that we have safer substitutes. What do you base your assertion upon that we know for sure they are safer?
Was that directed to me?
Whoever wants to answer it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, just for the record, Bob Livingston. It's based on our research department from the International Association of Firefighters that have done specific studies with respect to PBDEs. And while the other flame retardants still are toxic, what we have found is particularly with bromine and chlorine, which are main ingredients in PBDEs, that these are highly toxic substances. One of the alternatives that is available out there, and while I'm not a chemist, one of them that's out there is noted as, it's a phosphorus-based compound similar to what they do in wildland firefighting. I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but resusinol bis diphenyl phosphate, RDP, is one of the alternatives. And while there is toxicity in that, it's my understanding that they're not as toxic as the PBDEs.
Thanks. Any further questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Bob, You mentioned something about going into as a firefighter going into a house, or an establishment where flames were there. and the fear of the toxicity of, apparently of the PDPE, if I can keep, you know, it's a tongue twister for me, I mean, I was trying to do that.
Me too.
Tell me, you know, if there is no PDPE and it's a plastic, is that free of any toxicity as far as firefighters would be concerned?
That's a good question, Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen. I want to make it clear that, one, yes, plastics in and of themselves, when they burn, the byproducts that are given on are very and highly toxic. And the point of that is again, would want to emphasize that we appreciate the chemical companies that have found safer alternatives, and we would be the first to oppose legislation that would do a total ban, similar to my colleague, and while I don't want to speak for her, having seen burn children and people, anything that we can do to reduce burns, we're for. What we're interested in is if there are safer alternatives.
The other thing of note on that issue is that in the Washington report, in terms of furniture, they identified structural ways that the furniture can be built to help slow the spread of fire through the product. So that's something that does not involve a chemical.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 596. And committee, we have two other bills. One we're going to take up right away and hopefully quickly. Senate Bill, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 631. And we are expecting Senator Dingfelder. In the meantime, let's have Christine Svetkovich and Sue Marshall come on up. So what? We're going. It may be just you, Sue.
I'll go first. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today on behalf of Tualatin Riverkeepers in support of Senate Bill 631. Just to explain the Tualatin River, it's located predominantly in Washington County. It has a couple of claims to fame, one being that it was considered the most polluted river in Oregon, which led to a ban on a moratorium on development. Also, there was a successful citizen suit under the Clean Water Act, which led to the first total maximum daily loads under the Clean Water Act. The pollutant of concern was phosphorus, and very strict limits were set for the Tualatin River because it is a very slow and meandering river. The strict limit was 0.07 milligrams per liter. Restriction on phosphorus led Metro Regional Government in the Portland region to adopt a ban on phosphorus in laundry detergents. At that time, there was an exception made for automatic dishwashing detergent. The concern with phosphorus, and it acts as a pollutant in that it promotes the growth of algae, and as the algae dies off, it depletes the oxygen in the water. I have attached to my testimony evaluation of the success of that initial ban on phosphorus that was done back in 1991. The two main treatment plants, Durham treatment plant that discharges to the river, experienced a 22.2% per capita reduction on phosphorus. The Rock Creek treatment plant, a 40.1% per capita reduction on phosphate that was entering the river, in large part because of an industrial user that there was a byproduct of phosphorus that they sent down to Albany, and it was converted to fertilizer. So the result was of this ban on phosphorus was a reduction in costs for the treatment plants and cleaning up the river. Just to I guess, put this in a statewide perspective, the state of Oregon, there are 54 stream reaches and water bodies throughout the state that are listed as water quality limited for phosphorus. And in looking at this in a sustainability perspective, phosphorus is really an important element that's used commercially for agriculture and industry. It's largely mined from phosphate rock, and very much like oil reserves, it comes from the Middle East, and there is projections of peak phosphorus that would be depleted in the next 50 to 100 years. So it would be worth our while to use it wisely, and we appreciate your consideration of this important bill.
Thank you, Sue. Christine.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christine Svetkovich with the Water Program at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I do apologize for my tardiness. The gray water bill that you are also familiar with is up on the Senate side, and so I'm here today to provide testimony on Senate Bill 631 as amended. Reducing the amount of phosphorus that ends up in rivers and lakes in Oregon is very good for water quality. Currently, as Sue Marshall noted, Oregon does have lakes and river reaches that are impaired due to excess nutrients. When phosphorus gets into rivers, and especially lakes, it acts as a fertilizer for algal and aquatic weed growth. An excess of algal growth can then can in turn cause dissolved oxygen and pH conditions in the water that are harmful for fish and other aquatic organisms. In some cases, excess phosphorus can also lead to blooms of blue-green algae, which can produce toxins and cause water quality problems. Excessive aquatic weed growth can also impact swimming and boating activities. Reducing the amount of phosphorus entering sewage treatment plants reduces the likelihood that the facility will be required through their NPDES permit to remove phosphorus or reduce the amount of phosphorus that the facility is required to remove. This can be significant cost savings to municipalities or treatment districts and their ratepayers. Senate Bill 631, as amended, amends the current statute limiting the amount of phosphorus in cleaning agents by changing the limit for non-commercial automatic dishwasher detergents from 8.7% to 0.5%. When the original bill was passed in 1991, DEQ sent letters to all the retailers, sellers, and distributors of cleaning agents in Oregon regarding the new requirements. DEQ expects to do the same process if Senate Bill 631, as amended, passes. Thank you for your time. Are there any questions?
Let's find out. Any questions? Am I right in reading the bill, the effect of adding this single word commercial is to require then automatic dishwashers to be subject to the 0.5% requirement. So products for those dishwashers would be subject to that reduced threshold. There would still remain an exemption for commercial dishwashers. Is that?
Chair Cannon, that's correct. Accurate? It's mostly for individual homes.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you very much. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 631. There's no one else signed up to testify. Besides Senator Dingfelder, we can reopen it when she gets here. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 195. Brenda Bateman, Len Bergstein, Joe Esmond.
It's getting darker.
Yeah, it's getting darker.
Go for me.
No.
No?
Gillian, get Bates in here.
You and I are both suffering from the same neurological disorder.
Brenda, are you up first? Looks like it.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department. Thank you for the opportunity this afternoon to present to you Senate Bill 193 relating to wave energy. This is a bill that the agency submitted at the beginning of the session with 195. I've done this before, haven't we? My mistake. I apologize. the agency had developed this bill with the governor's office and several other agencies that you see here in the room this afternoon, as well as some who are down the hall right at the moment, and stakeholders. We met with stakeholders, it's been a year ago now, back in 2008, to first flesh out the language related to this bill. So wanted to walk through it with you very briefly. It's very short bill. Some background. Wave energy projects today are subject to water resource developments, water resource departments, hydroelectric licensing statutes. So they fall under our licensing statutes. And in statute today, pilot projects are allowed to connect, are not allowed to connect to the grid, but they are allowed to be placed into the water. So they can be placed in the water, but not connect to the grid, which means they have trouble recovering some of their costs. For other projects that are going to connect to the grid, they are subject to ORS 543. This is one of the department's statutes. And this is designed for the protection of fish and habitat in Oregon rivers and streams. Specifically, we're pointing out this statute, which is nicknamed the No Fish Injury Statute by the department and agencies and other stakeholders, and specifically says the Water Resources Commission may not approve activity that may result in mortality or injury to anadromous salmon and steelhead resources. Basically, it's saying if you're going to plug into the grid, those projects may not be placed in the ocean if there might be injury to fish. And so, in effect, this precludes pilot projects from connecting to the grid and therefore paying for themselves. Senate Bill 195 is a very brief bill that actually built upon language that went through, that passed in the 2007 session. And the purpose here is to retain the state's authority to protect the environment, so keep projects within the department's hydroelectric licensing statutes, and also place a requirement on them for adaptive management, and also allow, for the first time, small pilot projects to connect to the grid and recover their costs. And with this, we also wanted to promote consistency with land use planning. So we didn't want to get ahead of a land use territorial C process that's in place today. And what is inside this bill is a very narrow window in which pilot projects could apply and get an exemption under this bill. But then that goes away, so that the territorial plan process can continue its work and will actually direct the project siting and overlie all of those decisions in the future. Fourth, ensure public participation. There is a piece here in the bill that would allow for assistance with projects and project siting from an advisory group of representatives from local government and federally recognized Indian tribes who are affected by the wave energy project. So that is to invite their participation and input as the project is developing. And finally, this language is consistent with House Joint Memorial 22, also passed in the last session, which basically called for streamlined permitting processes for ocean wave energy projects at the federal level, and is very supportive of the wave energy industry here in Oregon. So with an eye on fiscal impacts, just wanted to let you know this bill has a minimal fiscal for our department. We actually have a fee that we charge now as part of our hydroelectric licensing program, so that would fall under this same fee structure. And those fees the department collects and then shares with our co-reviewers of applications, so that includes Fish and Wildlife and DEQ as well, and we would recoup our costs under that arrangement. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to take your questions.
Are there any questions for Brenda at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does a Division of State Lands get involved in that permitting? I thought it was.
Yes. In fact, the director is here and was part of the development of the bill.
Thank you.
Stick around, Brenda. Let's hear the rest of the testimony and then open it back up.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Leonard Bergstein, and I'm here appearing on behalf of Ocean Power Technologies. It's an American company, and it's one of the leaders, it's a global leader, actually, in the in generating renewable energy from ocean waves. We're currently in the permitting stage to develop renewable energy projects within Oregon's territorial sea, and it's near the communities of Reedsport and Coos Bay. I'm here testifying in support of Senate Bill 195. that for three quick reasons. Number one, it is a precise tool to solve a real problem, as Brenda Bateman has mentioned to you. Number two, it codifies the best practices that we are already engaged in, and those include the settlement agreement process and also adaptive management techniques to move slowly so that we go, learn, and then go. And then lastly, it allows us to go forward. Again, as you heard in the previous testimony, it allows us to actually put a buoy in the water, which means that we will be able to do what we are doing right now, and that is put people to work in companies such as the ones I've listed in that last paragraph right here in Oregon on this exciting renewable energy project. So often it's a modest bill that really moves us giant steps forward, and that's what we think of Senate Bill 195. So on behalf of Ocean Power Technologies, I hope you'll find this to be a good bill and that you'll move it to the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Graham Traynor. Today, with the Oregon AFL-CIO, today speaking on behalf of Joe Esmond with IBEW Local 48, and have nothing to say other than just IBEW Local 48 supports Senate Bill 195 and its passage. And to channel Mr. Esmond, they've got a trained workforce ready to go to work. So,
thank you. Any questions or comments, Representative Boone? Yeah, go ahead, Representative Boone.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to let the committee know that the Coastal Caucus supports this bill. You've heard us come before you before. We're not there today. I could sit there, but I can sit here too. And along with the seafloor mapping and some research that we want to do out in the ocean on fisheries, we are all about renewable energies resources and support this too. And this is a way that we can do take a small step and see how things are going to work without taking the big step at first. So there's been a lot of background work done on this issue, and things are coming along. We're working closely with OWET, the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, and the device manufacturers. And if I weren't here, I would be in Nova Scotia right now at the... seen a huge project go into the Bay of Fundy, so I'm trying to be happy here.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 195. We don't have the letter that we will need to remove the subsequent referral that this bill got tagged with. I think we're likely to get that from the Speaker, but if we were to work the bill today, we would have to send it to Ways and Means, and at this point, that's not our intention, given the minimal fiscal impact. So, with that, look at this, members. Representative Jensen?
I believe in the department's budget, there is a spot on this bill, or for this particular project.
So that budget subcommittee will get, and then Ways and Means Committee will get to pay attention to the issue as well.
I assume, yes.
Brenda.
That's correct, Brenda.
Do you want to come on up? Why don't you put it on the record? The question was about whether there's a POP related to this in the department's budget.
The governor's recommended budget.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, committee members, no, there is not a budget item for wave energy, no.
Well,
Philip,
then is ODF&W going to have the funds on this, and they're going to be dispersing them so that it's other funds to the water resources? Am I correct on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, with the fees that would come in on a per project basis, those would go out to the agencies that are participating in the review. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Brenda, and thank you for the question.
Well, that's all the time we got.
And with that, we close Senate Bill 195 and reopen Senate Bill 631 to welcome Senator Dingfelder.
I apologize. We were holding a hearing on Graywater.
I hope your conversations were as enlivening as ours.
I will tell you, I think you guys already had all the lively conversations.
You don't have Representative Smith on your committee. He... managed to keep, they're doing the Graywater.
We didn't have a discussion about diapers, I will tell you that much.
You guys missed out.
unanimous.
Okay, well, thank you very
much. So we're
much.
Back on phosphorus, members.
Right. Thank
we
you very much.
We did hear testimony from Sue Marshall and from Christine Spekovich.
Right. So, and I apologize. It was in the middle of the hearing when I got the note, and we just wanted to finish up, and there was a gentleman who came all the way from Madras to testify in support of the bill, so I wanted to hear what he had to say. I'm State Senator Jackie Dingfelder from Senate District 23, and thank you very much for holding a hearing on this bill, and you probably figured out that it's not my cell phone. That the bill is sponsored by actually myself and another senator and a representative that happens to be sitting up here. Thank you for that. The bill passed out of my Senate committee overwhelmingly and also on the Senate floor. So this had unanimous support in the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and put simply, the bill would lower the amount of phosphorus entering Oregon's waterways. You probably heard a little bit about the background of this bill, but it's near and dear to my heart because I started learning more about phosphorus when I was a watershed coordinator in the Tualatin Basin. And the Tualatin Basin is known for its problems with phosphorus. And we dealt with phosphorus both man-made and naturally occurring. And one of the things that helped was a ban on or a reduction in the amount of phosphorus in detergents, and that was passed in 1991 by this legislature. However, I found out that there was an exemption for dishwasher detergents. I'm not sure exactly why. I think because at the time there wasn't an alternative, and so the Dishwashing Detergent Association, and I don't know if they've testified here today, but the Soap and Detergent Association flew out from Washington, D.C., by the way, to testify in support of this bill in my committee. They had asked for an exemption because there was not alternatives at that time. So here we are almost 20 years later asking, and the industry said they would like to have the ban because there are now alternatives. So Senate Bill 631 removes the exemption and clarifies that dishwasher detergents are also limited to the 0.5% phosphorus limit that other detergents are now limited to. So when phosphorus is introduced, you probably have heard this already, it is a problem both in surface or groundwater because it increases the amount of algae growth. And that was the problem in the Tualatin River. We were having huge amounts of algal blooms, and especially in the summer. It can reduce oxygen levels in water and harm aquatic life. Other states have recognized that limiting phosphorus in detergents is a relatively easy way to reduce the amount of phosphorus entering waterways. There are now 12 other states with a similar limit on the amount of phosphorus in dishwasher detergents, including Washington. In my committee, we heard from environmental groups and the industry, as I mentioned, which support Senate Bill 631. I will say it was an eye-opening experience for me because I had an industry association fly in from Washington, D.C. and say, please pass this ban. I said that was
well, that
the
happens
first
all the time in the House committee, Senator.
Somehow it escapes us in the Senate committee. But in all my 8 years in the Oregon House and now a few months in the Senate, I'd never heard that before. So it was very interesting. They requested a few changes to the bill, which is now in the bill before you, and that was to make it more in line with Washington's legislation. Obviously, we have companies that sell in multiple states, and we didn't want to have a different standard in Oregon than we did in Washington. So Senate Bill 631A, which I'm assuming is in front of you now, was amended to incorporate those suggested changes, and the Soap and Detergent Association, as I mentioned, fully supports the bill. We felt the Senate felt this was a reasonable method to reduce phosphorus in Oregon's water, and I ask for your support over here in the House, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator, for bringing this bill forward. Since the industry is not here, then I believe that that gives us license to speculate wildly on their reasons, so I'm going to do that. My guess would be that their support would come from an increase in clarity and consistency of regulation and to make sure that they're able to be in line with what they're doing in other states. Is that what they testified about in front of your committee?
Correct. And as I mentioned, they were came and testified, and they said, we support the bill, but we asked for this amendment just to make it consistent with the other states, because the way it was originally drafted, it was not. So we did adopt those amendments. That's in the bill in front of you, and then they were in full support. And I can just tell you very quickly, because I'm sure you're dying to know, that the states where this legislation has already passed is Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia, and then soon to be Washington. The amendments that, just so you know, what they requested was an exemption for commercial and institutional dishwashing detergents, because apparently the cycle that the commercial dishwashers run through is so short, it's about a minute. It's been a while since I worked in food service, so I think they've gotten a lot faster. But so this exemption is also found in Washington's legislation, and then DEQ requested that the effective date change to July 1st, 2010, which will place Oregon's effective date in line with Washington. So those two changes were made in the bill.
Yeah, and that's I have an article from the Oregonian back in early April that describes this, the industry movement on this issue. As states adopted this ban, the industry went from a position of opposing to supporting but asking that they be effective in 2010 and that they contain this exemption. So,
and I will note that many of the detergents that are already available on the market have voluntarily reduced their phosphorus level, but this would obviously require that all of them be in line. But there are, I think it was mentioned in that article, I know that I buy mine from Trader Joe's, and I was reading the box, and it's low phosphorus. It could be because it's manufactured in California, and that probably is in line with California's regs. But so there are already products on the market, but this would make it consistent among all the dishwashing detergents.
Follow-up, President Bailey.
Not a question, Mr. Chair, just an observation that there are some interesting parallels here with another bill that we've heard today. Availability of alternatives, perhaps industry coming on board to support it after a few states take the lead. We have some themes here today.
Indeed. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Senator.
Great. Thank you for letting me off easy. And
Well,
appreciate you hearing the bill. And if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them anytime.
Yeah, I'm glad that you didn't, you know, threaten to hold up our bills if we didn't pass this, because by doing so, you would have immediately lost his support for this bill if he thought he had an opportunity to. My vice chair thought he had an opportunity to jeopardize our bills over in your committee.
You're
sure
still
he'd
a
You would.
With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 631, and I think we're prepared to work this bill, so I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 631A and ask for a motion. Or not. Representative Bailey.
Oh, you got me?
Anybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 631A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves Senate Bill 631A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative
Jensen. Aye. Leave them over there. Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair Cannon.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 631 is on its way to the floor. Representative Bailey, would you be willing to carry it?
I'd love to, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Super. And with that,
I'm a vote at environmental.
It's not the first.
No.
Hopefully not the last. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 631 and close House Committee on Environment and Water.